Brave New World.
Hello and welcome to this week's Brave New World programme. My name's John Harrison. We've all watched movies like The Godfather and know about cloak and dagger type persecution against individuals, and we've read spy novels where people are tortured and even killed. But nowadays, thanks to modern technology, organisations of various kinds and sizes seem to possess more subtle means of pressure against individuals. To talk about this whole issue, I welcome to the programme Laurie Colquhoun, a philosopher and author. Welcome to the programme, Laurie.
Hello, John.
Now, Laurie, in your new book, which I've had a look through, thank you, it's very interesting reading, you talk about the new mob. Can you give us an idea of who you're talking about?
Okay, first of all, I need to clarify that this is actually a novel, so the narrator is not identical with the author.
Okay.
And so so I've already tricked you with it, I see, which is good, because it's supposed to be a work of metafiction, which plays with the boundaries between reality and fiction.
Yeah.
So the new mob is this, in a way, shadowy organization which is modeled on the old mob, but it has the latest and greatest techniques of persecution, as you mentioned. So rather than using guns and knives, the new mob has developed subtler techniques of eliminating its enemies. And they're subtler not because they are better at destroying people, but because they leave no trace of the aggressors behind.
Yeah.
So what is relayed throughout the course of the novel are a series of techniques by which dissidents or troublemakers or people who have information that they shouldn't have can be eliminated. And these all trade on the same stratagem, which is to have the person eliminated as either, basically to have the person eliminated, but without there seeming to be any aggressor. Mm-hmm. So the victim looks to be the victim of only fate, as though this were not a crime at all. So examples would be an apparent suicide, a person who is institutionalized. Of course, this has gone on for, you know, many centuries, this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But what's new about the new mob is that they're using the latest and greatest methods of surveillance, which we know about, you know, with mass surveillance, NSA revelations, and also the latest and greatest developments in chemistry, particularly pharmacology and chemical warfare.
Yeah. Okay. I understand it's a novel, perhaps a work of fiction. And so you're not basing it on your own experiences. Perhaps you're gathered material for that tale from the experiences of other people, in which case could you perhaps give us an indication of how widespread you think this might be?
Well, we don't know how widespread it is. In a way, this is a thought experiment. So think of the tools we have at our disposal and how they can be used to eliminate troublemakers. We all know of individual cases of this journalist or this person who appears to have committed suicide. And what I pose as a possibility in this very disturbing work is that some of these people may have committed suicide under great pressure to do so.
Yeah.
In ways that we have never imagined. So what I try to do in the book, and this relates back to some of my work on war, is I try to examine the position of the victim from the perspective of the victim. Because the only story, the only side of the story we ever get is, you know, the victors write history. So whoever whacks these people actually gets the last word. They find the suicide. We don't really know what happened. And so I flesh out some possibilities of how these people may have really been eliminated through the conscious intentions of malevolent actors.
Yeah, it's a frightening landscape that you're portraying here. Certainly, I think that many of us listening to you now will feel a little fear and a little bit worried that this could happen, perhaps not to me or to you personally, but who knows, but to friends and relatives and people that we know. I suppose I want to say people who we know are involved in some sort of activity which is a threat to an organization, perhaps state organization, a government, which has an ideology and which has a target and a strategy, which is under threat, which is being put under threat by these individuals in some way. Because that's what we're talking about, isn't it? I mean, we're not talking about, you know, chemists sort of having fun and experimenting on people. We're talking about intentional covert actions which are being carried out against individuals.
That's right. And you're right. It's a frightening world which is portrayed in this book.
Yeah.
But it's also a very real possibility given the tools available to people and the ways in which people conceive of their adversaries. So one of the aims of this work, it has many different aims. It's really a multi-generic work. It's not just a novel. It's also a work of metafiction. It's also a work of philosophy, both in the sense of addressing issues of epistemology and metaphysics. You know, how do we define history versus stories versus fiction? Mm-hmm. And then also a philosophical investigation of the very concept of corruption and how these sprawling organizations can actually be more dangerous than solitary evil people, because they really only need, you know, one or two bad apples, and then they sort of spin out of control. So we know this from history. We know this from the Third Reich. I mean, no one can forget that. And so the question is, what happens when you have one or two or a handful of bad apples who have these tools at their disposal, and then you have all sorts of banality of evil people contributing in this, you know, gargantuan tentacular bureaucracy?
Yeah, I mean, but then your work, surely then, it borders into eugenics, into the manipulation of genes, of manipulation of human beings by other human beings for some sort of purpose. Or are you really concentrating now on the punishment, the isolation and punishment of certain individuals because they have infringed some laws that society has supposedly set up, or their own laws?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm talking about the elimination of perceived threats.
Yeah.
So the question is, what constitutes a threat? And that's going to be dependent upon, you know, that is determined by the person who perceives the threat. So some people will say that a journalist who writes subversive critiques of the government is a threat, right? We know that recently the U.S. government announced that they're going to counter cyber attacks with nuclear retaliation, which is kind of unbelievable. But that just shows you that the people in power have the capacity to determine what constitutes a threat and what sorts of means can and should be taken against those threats.
Yeah. Let's take a short break here.
Brave New World.
Welcome back to Brave New World program. My name is John Harrison. I'm having a fascinating conversation with author and philosopher Laurie Calhoun about the modern day way that individuals can be persecuted. Now, we've just touched on the subject of securitization. I suppose that's really what it's all about, isn't it? The way that individuals, the way that threats are created, and the way that a threat can be securitized. And if it's securitized, then it's deemed to be bad, and therefore a military solution can be found to it. But beyond all that, I suppose there are organizations, clandestine or semi-clandestine organizations, that are powerful enough to take action without anything being securitized.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the power of the stratagem, which I lay out in this book, is that it's not perceived by the vast majority of people to involve any crime whatsoever. So the perpetrators are never discovered. It's all covert. So we know that covert actions are taken out. And we know also from the drone program that the ways in which the kill lists, for example, are drawn up are themselves covert. We don't know why these people are being put on the list. We're never provided with that information under cover of state secrets privilege. We're told we can't know this information. So the question then is, what prevents those very same people from adding people to their list who happen to say uncomfortable truths, for example?
Yeah, but of course the counter-argument would be to that, that this all sounds very paranoid. And how are you sure that this is really just any more than your imagination? I mean, sorry, Laurie, I didn't mean your personal imagination.
No, not at all. That's exactly the power of the stratagem, because it's so preposterous and it's so evil and iniquitous and heinous that no one could actually believe that this could happen.
Yeah.
So as I said, this is a thought experiment where I'm basically fleshing out possibilities. So think of something like George Orwell's 1984, right? I'm fleshing out possibilities of how the world could be if certain people acquired access to these corridors of power. And we know from history that this sort of thing does happen now and then. And the difference now is that we have much more powerful tools technologically and pharmacologically.
Well, yeah. And also we have governments that have actually instituted state-run, completely legal in those days, experimental programs using psychedelic drugs and using all sorts of psychotropic drugs against large numbers of people in the aims of perfecting weapon systems. I mean, this has happened in my lifetime.
That's That's right. That's absolutely right. And so what I'm saying, although you suggested rightly that the stratagem sounds really paranoid, in fact, if you look at the history of the CIA and the KGB, both of them developed these sorts of psychomimetic agents with the express intention of eliminating enemy spies and people who are considered to be traitors.
What happens if you are attacked, if not you're attacked by this sort of, in this sort of method? What would an individual do if he or she is still conscious of the fact that he or she retains their ego, that, you know, their identity has not been completely destroyed, and they are able to physically move and they're able to talk? What should he or she do? Who should he or she turn to, if there is anybody to turn to when you're in that state?
Well, this is exactly the logic of the novel. The novel portrays the case of a narrator who is in this preposterous situation where she can't actually talk about what has been done to her or what she fears will be done to her, because if she does, she'll be sent off to the loony farm. So she can't talk about it. So what she does instead is she finds herself, there are three parts to the novel. Book one is the town where she's initially assaulted. Book two is the summer of love where the assaults continue. And book three is the bunker where she manages to isolate herself, to protect herself physically from assaults. And during that period, she writes fiction in which she relays the stories in ways that can allow outsiders to identify connections between cases in history and her own case, and then just say, you know, is it really plausible that the two genuinely psychotic people could devise the very same story about the very same organization and the very same person?
Yeah.
So that's how she does it in the story. The story just trails off at the end because you don't really know what happens to the narrator. She just disappears. So we don't know what the conclusion to the narrator's story is, but she does devise means by which to counter the stratagem by, in effect, playing along as though the work of fiction they created is in fact a work of fiction, and refusing to relay any of her experiences to anyone as though they were facts in reality, because they just sound too crazy. If she actually attempts to tell anyone, she herself will discredit herself.
Yeah, right.
That's how it works in the novel. In reality, you know, who knows how a person in this this situation would be able to cope.
Laurie, I have this suspicion, because I know that you've written some actually pretty successful books about drones, about the use of drones to identify, kill enemies of states. Are you suggesting possibly in this novel that this is a next level of warfare that can be used by governments to eliminate individuals that they are not comfortable with?
Oh, definitely. And I also believe that drone technology, as it continues to progress, will be usable in this sort of scenario, because the micro drones, you can't even see them, right? So this sort of attack that I'm describing, which the novel itself is set in the 1990s, so that's pre-drone. But I definitely am talking about this whole phenomenon of targeting, which we now know goes on with the drones. And the question is, what happens if the people who do the targeting start to view people within their country as enemies or as threats? And what can they do? What can both the targets do? And how, you know, what sorts of real dangers are posed by these sorts of technologies?
Yeah, okay. Well, one would hope that there is a public infrastructure in our countries which protects us against this sort of thing happening, and that social workers and other people who become involved and will identify that there is some sort of poisoning or some sort of psychotic substance being injected into the body, which is altering people's consciousness to the state where they become totally paranoid and so on. So one would hope that this is not going to happen. At least it's not happening now. I'm laughing nervously.
Well, one certainly hopes so. I mean, there are cases right now of targeted individuals who claim that they're being attacked in various ways. Of course, they all sound crazy, you know, but the book poses the possibility that this sort of thing could, in fact, happen.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned earlier, it has been done by governmental organizations, both the CIA and the KGB. The only question is it being done in some new way? You know, could the novel actually be reflective of reality? Let's hope not.
Yeah. Okay, Laurie. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'd advise listeners, you can get hold of that book. You can leave. It's on Kindle and all sorts of other ebook platforms. So thank you hugely, Laurie. And thank you very much, listeners, for being with us for a really good Brave New World program. Goodbye.